Welcome to the Cancer Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at the time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce our moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Mister, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Kath. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to the Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Understanding the Cost of Care and Your Healthcare Coverage. And this is part two of Life with Cancer, a guide to getting the best care. And today's program is supported by the Cigna Group, and I really wanted to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I have a few things I'd like to address with all of you. We have over 136 participants on the call today who come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Iran, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So it's really a pleasure to have all of you on the call today. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Leonard Saltz. And Dr. Saltz is a medical oncologist, executive director for clinical value and sustainability, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, professor of medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Saltz will be addressing discussion of cancer treatments, overview of the medical and indirect costs of treatment, and talking with your healthcare team about your financial concerns. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Saltz.
Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you today. What I'm going to try to help you feel comfortable with is the idea of communicating with your healthcare team in terms of understanding what treatments are being proposed, understanding that it's your choice to accept or not accept those treatments, that doctors don't give you orders, they give you recommendations. And before you can accept or decline those recommendations, you need an understanding of everything that's involved and that that's expected, that's okay. And then I want to talk to you a bit about some of the aspects of the financial considerations of going through cancer treatment and how to navigate some of those challenges. For people just beginning on the cancer journey, you're encountering a lot of complex terms that you may or may not understand. If you remember nothing else from the conversations with me today, please remember it's always okay to ask questions. And you're not supposed to understand this arcane world of cancer care that you never wanted to enter, but now you're forced into. You didn't have a class in school on how to understand this stuff. No one expects you to. And it's our job as healthcare professionals to give you the information you need to understand what's going on, to understand what choices are available to you, to understand what options aren't realistically available to you, and to help you make the best choices to optimize your care. When we talk about treatment, we talk about three major aspects of treatment. That's surgery, radiation therapy, and chemotherapy or medical therapy. I'm going to talk to you mostly about the concept of chemotherapy, and I want to point out to you that chemotherapy is nothing but a fancy word for drugs. In medicine, we seem to like big words, and sometimes we make things a little more complicated than they need to be by using big words when being a bit more direct about it would help make things clearer. So when you hear the word chemotherapy, that's chemo as in chemical, therapy as in treatment, another simple term for that is drug. Different drugs have different side effects, different drugs are used in different types of cancer, and different drugs will be available or appropriate in different circumstances. So remember that somebody else's experience with cancer may have very little to do with what your experience is or is going to be because of the differences in different treatments that may be appropriate, as well as differences between different people. Now, within the concept of cancer treatment or cancer chemotherapy, there are kind of three major categories that are worth understanding. One is classic chemotherapy, and a way that we sometimes think about it is cytotoxic, cytocell toxic, poisonous. Basically, older drugs that basically try to selectively kill the cancer cells by attacking them directly. And because sometimes the differences between cancer cells and normal cells are relatively subtle, there is some damage to normal cells. That's what leads to side effects. So old-fashioned chemotherapy, which is still widely used, is drugs to directly try to kill the cancer. A really important change that has happened over the past decade or so is the advent of another type of treatment called immunotherapy. In immunotherapy, which is technically a chemotherapy because it's technically a drug, but immunotherapy is a drug that doesn't attack the cancer. What immunotherapy does is it makes your immune system stronger, and it makes it strong enough to attack the cancer. There are certain types of cancers where immunotherapies work really well, and there are certain types of cancers where so far immunotherapy has been disappointing and doesn't work. So it's perfectly reasonable to ask your doctor whether immunotherapy, either alone or with chemotherapy, should be part of your treatment. But understand that there are some circumstances where that's just not going to be the right answer. There are different immunotherapy drugs that can be used in different circumstances. And in many people, these will have no side effects at all. But in some people, we will have what is called immunotoxicity, where as the immune system is revved up, the immune system may start attacking a normal part of the body. So if the immune system attacks the colon, you could get diarrhea. If the immune system attacks the skin, you could get a rash. If the immune system attacks the thyroid, you could have a low thyroid function. So these are the kinds of things that are possible side effects. And of course, if your medical team is proposing these treatments, then you can expect, and if you don't feel satisfied that you've gotten, ask for a discussion of what are the possible side effects and what do we do about them if they happen. Remember, many of the drugs can have side effects, but we do everything we can to reduce those side effects. The two side effects that people often worry about the most are nausea and loss of hair. Not all drugs will cause that. It's worth asking, if those matter to you, whether those are likely to happen. One of the most important changes in the last 30 years of cancer treatment has been really substantial improvement in anti-nausea medicine. So your doctors, if they're giving you drugs that are likely to cause nausea, will also give you drugs that will help prevent it. Now, when you are experiencing cancer treatment, there are a lot of potential costs that are involved, and the speakers that come after me are going to give you more details on how to cope with this. But you need to be thinking about these costs, and you need to be open to discussing these costs with your doctor. You're going to be discussing personal things with your doctor. You're going to be discussing intimate things. You're going to be discussing bowel function, bladder function, sexual function, everything about how you feel. Don't be shy about discussing finances. And yet somehow in our society, often people do feel shy about these kinds of discussions. It's important to know that this is part of coping with your cancer, and getting help coping with these concerns is part of cancer care. So understanding, what will your insurance cover? Are there things that won't be covered? What are what we call some of the indirect costs of treatment? The cost because of lost work time, the cost of travel, parking, transportation, the cost of child care, if that's a factor. These are things that you need to think about, and also, if they're a concern, need to be speaking with your medical team so that they're aware of your challenges so they can help you find the resources that are going to be necessary for you to cope with these challenges. So again, just to reiterate, you're not in this alone. Your healthcare team, the doctors, the nurses, the nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, the social workers, the support staff that's available to you are all people that you need to be communicating with to help everyone understand what are the challenges that you're experiencing so that we can help you cope with those challenges. With that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to the next speaker.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Saltz. That was just a sterling presentation. Wonderful. In every way, and since you are the first speaker, you kind of set the tone. I should do set the tone for today's program, so I want to thank you very much, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Michelle McCourt, and Ms. McCourt is Executive Director, Cancer Care Co-Payment Assistance Foundation, and she'll be addressing accessing financial co-payment assistance, Medicare and Medicaid programs, support for the underinsured and uninsured, including the Affordable Care Act, ACA, and Medicaid, and advocating for help with the cost of cancer treatment. It's my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. McCourt.
Thank you, Carolyn, and good afternoon, everyone. As Carolyn mentioned, my topics today are accessing financial and co-payment assistance, Medicare and Medicaid programs, support for the underinsured and uninsured, advocating for help with the cost of cancer treatment. Cancer is an expensive illness. Even with insurance, many patients still face access and affordability barriers that negatively impact their ability to start or stay on treatment. This is referred to as underinsured, meaning you have insurance, but the out-of-pocket costs required by your plan make it impossible to access the treatments deemed necessary for you by your physician. There are co-payment assistance programs available that can help. These programs are designed to address the financial needs of insured patients by offering assistance with co-payments, co-insurance, and premiums that can be a barrier to patients. These programs serve as a safety net for patients who have no other alternative resource for assistance. There are different types of co-payment assistance programs. Some are administered directly through the pharmaceutical company, and others are administered through an independent nonprofit organization or foundation like Cancer Care. Eligibility for these programs vary depending on your diagnosis, your treatment, and the type of insurance coverage you have. Patients with private commercial insurance, such as insurance offered through an employer, may be eligible for a program offered by the pharmaceutical company that manufactures their treatment. These programs offer coupons, where the most you might have to pay for your prescription is $25, or they may offer a copay payment card to be used for payment when they purchase their prescription. Typically, these programs are drug-specific for brand-name medications only, and may only be offered when there is no generic drug equivalent available, and the medication prescribed is manufactured by that drug company. There is usually an income criteria that has to be met, and only patients with private commercial insurance are eligible to apply. Patients with Medicare or Medicaid are not eligible for this type of program. For patients with no insurance, the drug company may offer a patient assistance program that will provide the drug free. In some cases, if there is no copay fund open or available to assist Medicare patients, they can apply to the manufacturer's patient assistance program. However, that medication will not count toward the out-of-pocket cost to meet their deductible. To learn about these programs, you can contact the drug company who makes your medication to find out about their patient support programs. A simple internet search using the name of the medication should bring you to the medication website, which will include a page with patient resources. The other type of program is referred to as a co-payment assistance foundation. Co-payment assistance foundations are administered by an independent nonprofit organization and are not affiliated with the drug company. These programs have established specific financial, medical, and insurance criteria that need to be met. The funds offered are disease-specific, not drug-specific. If eligible, the foundation will provide financial assistance with the out-of-pocket costs associated with accessing the approved treatment. Out-of-pocket costs can include deductibles, co-pays, and co-insurance for the medications used to treat the disease. For example, to be eligible for Cancer Care's Co-Payment Assistance Foundation, the primary cancer diagnosis must match one of the funds that we have open. The household income must be at or below 500% of the federal poverty level. The patient must have insurance that is covering a portion of the medication prescribed. Some of our funds are restricted to only patients insured through a federal health insurance plan, such as Medicare or a Medicare Advantage plan, or TRICARE, which is military insurance. Patients must be in active treatment or have a prescription to start treatment. Patient must be a U.S. citizen or legal resident of the United States or U.S. territories. To review the list of funds we support and current status, you can go online to our website at cancercarecopay.org. From there, you can review the eligibility criteria and start the enrollment process. If a fund is closed, you can register to receive an email notification for when the fund is open. Along with Cancer Cares Foundation, there are approximately 9 other national copay foundations. The best way to find out about all of these programs is to discuss these financial concerns with your healthcare team. They can put you in touch with a financial counselor or a social worker. You can contact Cancer Care and speak with one of our resource navigators. Also through our website, cancercare.org, you can access our Helping Hand online resource database. This is a tool that can help you find national and local resources that offer financial assistance. Please keep in mind that these foundations rely on donations and are limited based on the amount of funding that they have available. If you have been referred to a foundation or notified that a fund is open, get in touch with them right away to start the application process. Funds will open and close quickly at various times throughout the year. I also want to discuss Medicare, Medicaid, and the recent changes that went into effect this year for Medicare Part D, as in David. Medicare is a federal health insurance program for people ages 65 or older, or for those under 65 that are disabled and receiving Social Security disability. Medicaid is state assistance offered to people with low incomes. The criteria for Medicaid varies by each state. Medicare Part D is the prescription drug benefit offered to Medicare enrollees. A Part D plan can be purchased in addition to regular Medicare, or it is a prescription benefit included through a Medicare Advantage plan. New this year, Part D out-of-pocket costs are capped at $2,000. This really is very good news for many patients prescribed high-cost prescriptions. In addition, there is also a Medicare prescription payment plan offered to Part D enrollees. The payment plan is optional, and once enrolled, you will have a zero copay when you pick up your prescription, but you will receive a monthly statement from your Part D plan to pay them directly throughout the calendar year. So instead of having to pay a high copay to the pharmacy at the time of purchase, the payments can be spread out over the course of the year and paid to your Part D plan. There are definite benefits to this program and should be explored by the beneficiary to determine if the prescription payment plan is an option. More information can be found on the Medicare website at medicare.gov. There are also various Medicare savings programs that can help with costs. These are state-run programs based on income and assets that help with Medicare premiums and copays. Each state is different, but generally the income requirement is at or below 150% of the federal poverty level. More information can be found on your state's government website. These programs can help with the Medicare Part B premiums and the 20% coinsurance not covered by Medicare Part B. There is also Part D extra help that can lower Medicare prescription drug plan costs like premiums, deductibles, and coinsurance. If eligible for Part D extra help, this program, the most you may have to pay for a prescription is $12.15. We realize this is a lot of information, and when you are already in a stressful situation, such as dealing with a cancer diagnosis, it can be overwhelming. Again, let your healthcare team know if you are experiencing difficulties paying for your treatments. They can connect you with a patient navigator, social worker, or financial counselor who can help navigate and access these resources. Thank you, and I will turn this back over to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Secord. That was just wonderful, just an excellent presentation. Very informative, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Just a sterling presentation. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Michelle Weiss, and Ms. Weiss is a lawyer, and she is a staff attorney with legal unit, the New York Legal Assistance Group, NILAG. And she will be discussing the benefits and limitations of your health plans, insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid coverage, tips on appealing your insurance and Medicare claims and provider denials, and living wills, healthcare proxies, and advanced health care directives. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Weiss.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I'm very pleased to be part of this workshop with Cancer Care. I'll first be discussing how to access and understand both the benefits and the limitations of your health coverage. To understand your health coverage, it is important to know that there are different types of health insurance plans. For example, there are private insurances which include group plans from employment and unions. There are policies available through the Affordable Care Act via the state marketplace, and of course there are Medicare and Medicaid. And in the state of New York, there is also the Essential Plan, which bridges the gap between Medicaid and commercial individual plans in terms of income eligibility for people who get their health insurance via the state marketplace. The type of plan you have is going to determine the type of laws and rules that apply regarding coverage, eligibility, and appeals. The insurance laws of your state may also require certain minimum benefits, so your rights may also vary depending on where you live. Some plans are subject only to federal law, while other plans are subject to both federal and state law. As a start, the most important advice I can give is to read your policy. You can also contact your insurance company directly with questions about coverage and its limits. Is your policy an HMO, which stands for Health Maintenance Organization, which allows only in-network doctors, or is it a PPO, a Preferred Provider Organization, or a Point of Service type of plan, POS, both of which allow for out-of-network doctors, but often at a reduced reimbursement rate or greater out-of-pocket cost. With an HMO, you usually have a copay and sometimes a deductible, but no other financial burden if your doctor is in network. With other policies, your out-of-network doctor can bill you directly for any amount not paid by your insurance, but this is known as balanced billing. Understanding your policy can help you make informed decisions about your medical care and avoid surprises. Because of the Affordable Care Act's increased protections, insurers must sell and renew insurance regardless of health status. Most insurers can no longer refuse coverage of pre-existing conditions. They can't limit the dollar amount they will pay for medical costs over the year or over your lifetime. However, some policies that existed before 2010 are grandfathered in, meaning they don't have to comply with the ACA. Furthermore, in recent years, there has been an increasing availability of plans that are permitted to skirt the minimal essential coverage guaranteed under the ACA. So often, if a low monthly premium seems too good to be true, it probably is. Additionally, thanks to the ACA, a health insurance marketplace operates in every state. If you do not qualify for employer-sponsored insurance or Medicare, you can get insurance on the ACA marketplace in your state. You can compare different plan benefits, see if you're entitled to lower costs through subsidies, and determine if you're eligible for free coverage under Medicaid. You can access this information at the federal website, healthcare.gov. All marketplace and employer-sponsored plans cover essential health benefits, which include outpatient and emergency services, prescriptions, hospitalizations, mental health, preventive care, and more. It's important to remember that even with ACA expansions, all policies can still restrict coverage by limiting physical therapy visits, home nursing, or mental health visits allowed per year, major medical procedures, and imaging usually require pre-authorization. Therefore, it's important to check with your doctor's office to confirm. Health insurance is essentially a contract. You and your employer agree to pay a set premium, participate in cost sharing, and follow the guidelines. In return, your health insurer agrees to cover certain services in your policy and those required by law. The full insurance policy is called the certificate of coverage, and it can be lengthy. Your insurance company or your employer must provide you with a copy if you ask for it. And also, you should read your summary of benefits, which is like a shorthand of what's in the certificate of coverage. It breaks down your cost sharing and basics of your policy. Now I would like to speak about Medicare. It is a federal program with uniform rules in all 50 states. It's primarily available to people who are 65 or older, who are citizens or permanent residents. If under 65, those who have been receiving Social Security disability income for 24 months are also Medicare eligible. And as Michelle McCourt said, there's Part A for hospital coverage, B for medical, and D for prescription the prescription drug plan. For most people, enrollment in A, B, and D is obligatory as of your initial enrollment, and you could incur a monthly penalty for late enrollment at a later time. But there are exceptions that are beyond the scope of this presentation. Highly recommend Medicare Right Center as a great resource to find out if your individual situation requires you to enroll in Part B while also enrolled if you have employer-sponsored insurance at the same time. And Medicare also has Part C, also, which allows private health insurance companies to provide benefits with all of those parts provided within the Part C plan, which is also known as a Medicare Advantage plan. Part A and B don't cover the entire cost of treatment, usually a maximum of 80%. You supplement either by buying a Medigap plan. I shall point out that these policies are exempt from ACA requirements. Some do have pre-existing condition exclusions, so be sure to read carefully. And their costs vary state to state. Medicare rules are complicated, and I advise my clients to speak to an expert. Medicare Right Center, again, is a very good resource. Turning now to Medicaid, it is a partnership between the state and federal government with shared authority and financing. Eligibility rules are established mainly by each state and vary depending on where you live. It is free and is needed for many people with cancer because it covers home nursing, home aides, and nursing home care. To be eligible, you must fall below the income and asset limits set forth by Medicaid law. If you're over 65 or disabled but have a higher income, you may become eligible through special Medicaid programs. Medicaid plans with higher income limits are also offered in many states for patients with certain type of cancer or for working people with disabilities. As I mentioned earlier, one application on the marketplace can determine your eligibility for Medicaid or another health plan, as well as any subsidies for premiums. Medicaid can also act as secondary coverage to Medicare or employer-sponsored plans. For eligible people, Medicaid may cover the 20% of costs that Medicare does not cover. This eliminates the need to buy the Medigap policy, but only if you're income eligible. Now, moving on to appeals. Your insurance company is required to provide an explanation of benefits, shorthand is EOB, for each claim. The EOB outlines the service, the amount paid by your insurance, your required contribution, and if the plan will cover the service that was requested, and if not, why not. You have the right to request a full copy of your insurance file prior to appeal. So if you want to challenge the denial, to see how the decision was made, including notes made by the case handler and any reports by the insurance company doctor. Sometimes claims are denied for administrative reasons that are easy to fix. You should email or call your insurer and keep track of any correspondence by writing down the date and name of the representative you spoke with. If the matter can't be resolved this way, you can appeal. after reading your policy, document clearly in writing the reasons you disagree with the insurance company, include medical records and a doctor letter. Your insurance company must conduct a full and fair review of its decision within 30 days of your submission of the appeal. If you're worried that your insurance company isn't complying with the law or the terms of the policy, you can submit a complaint against the plan with your state insurance department or with the Department of Labor, which is federal, depending on the type of plan you have. If your insurance company denies the appeal, you can request an external review. This is a second level of appeal to an independent panel. No matter where you live or what type of insurance you have that right. This means that medical professionals with no financial stake in the claim make the decision about whether the denial is appropriate or not. The denial by the health plan. If the external reviewer overturns your insurer's denial, your insurer must provide the payments or services in your claim. A great resource for helping appeal plan denials is an organization called Community Health Advocates in New York. It's a free service that helps people get, use, and keep their health insurance. If you have an appeal, if your plan denied something and your doctors aren't appealing it for you, I highly recommend reaching out to Community Health Advocates for help. It is important to pay attention to timing in filing an appeal, as there are very strict deadlines which are indicated in the denial. It's usually 180 days if you have a policy from your employer and as little as 60 days for Medicaid or Medicare denials. The good news is that around half of all denied claims that are appealed are reversed, and the rates for overturning at external review are even higher. I'm going to move on to advanced directives. These are the documents that allow you to decide in advance what medical care to receive, who you choose to communicate with your medical team if you become unable to do so, and who you choose to handle your financial matters. The laws regarding the rights granted by these documents vary by state, so this is only general information. A healthcare proxy allows you to name an agent to make healthcare decisions for you. It's important that the proxy be executed while someone is able to understand what the document means, as it does not take effect until the person is unable to communicate their wishes to their doctor. Many states have surrogate decision-making laws that define who can make decisions for you. Although the laws are helpful, it's best for you to have the choice in who to trust with these decisions. As long as you are able to make your healthcare decisions yourself, your doctor will discuss them with you. The living will is a statement of one's wishes with respect to potential end-of-life medical care decisions and can serve as a guidance to your healthcare agent and healthcare providers. It's different from a proxy in that it sets forth on paper your wishes with regard to artificial respiration, CPR, artificial nutrition, and invasive procedures. It is important to remember that a living will applies only when it is determined that the patient is in an incurable or irreversible condition with no reasonable expectation of recovery. It does not apply in less serious circumstances. Both the healthcare proxy and living will are simple forms to complete with witnesses required. And I also want to mention the power of attorney. This form allows an individual to name an agent to handle their personal affairs during their lifetime, including banking, insurance, and other financial matters. It does not cover healthcare issues, but it is useful if you need a trusted person to help navigate your insurance, government, or financial systems. This form is more complex and requires notarization. Often a health power of attorney can circumvent the need to have a guardian appointed, which can be a long, stressful, and expensive court proceeding. This is because a power of attorney goes into effect the moment it is signed by both you and your agent and stays in effect even if you lose capacity later. I know this is a lot of information, but it's important to understand what these documents are, how they can help make sure that your family and your medical team can take action that is not only in your best interest, but also follows your wishes and autonomy. And I also want to briefly mention the National Cancer Legal Service Network. It's a nationwide group of attorneys who offer free legal advice to people with cancer. And that's my presentation. Thank you. Sorry I ran a little over.
Thanks so much, Ms. Weiss. It was well worth it and a lot of wonderful information for our participants. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you so much. And a lot of these details are really important. I also should let you all know that this program is occurring live, but it also will be available as a podcast within a week of the program with closed caption for the hearing impaired so that everyone will be able to, and it's usually up for at least a year. And so you can listen to the program as often as you want. There's no cost for it, and it runs 24 hours a day throughout the entire year. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Jennifer LaPietra, and she is an oncology social worker, and she is our patient assistance program manager for cancer care. And she'll be discussing other resources for financial assistance, self-advocacy, what to do when cancer treatment seems unaffordable. And then she'll also review Cancer Care's free programs and services, and we'll give you information about our Hope Line and our website. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. LaPietra.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. It's an honor to participate in today's program. As our panel of experts have shared, it can be incredibly challenging to manage the cost associated with a cancer diagnosis. I will discuss how to potentially help alleviate these costs and explore ways to seek financial support. Individuals who experience financial concerns throughout treatment may find it helpful to discuss these concerns with their medical providers. It may also be helpful to connect with an oncology social worker, a patient navigator, and the financial department at the treatment center or facility to see if there are any financial options available for you. When discussing your cancer diagnosis, I suggest contacting your health insurance to see what your coverage entails, as it can be helpful to know ahead of time what treatments and medical services your insurance covers, and whether you are responsible for any out-of-pocket expenses. This can help you better prepare for any costs related to scans or further testing, as well as an upcoming treatment regimen. When calling your insurance provider, see if a case manager can be assigned to help you navigate your policy. Being diagnosed with a cancer diagnosis and not having health insurance can bring many challenges that are stressful and emotionally difficult. Feelings such as uncertainty and anxiety are very common, but these should not keep you from getting treatment. If you're in this position, it may be helpful to check out possible charity care programs through the treatment center or hospital. If you or your spouse are employed, you may be eligible to receive medical coverage. If you had insurance but lost your job, you may be eligible to receive COBRA health insurance. Sometimes full-time and part-time students may be able to receive medical coverage through their college or university. I also encourage you to see what you're eligible for through the healthcare marketplace. If you're able and eligible, apply for government programs as soon as possible, such as Medicare or Medicaid. For people without insurance, direct medical costs can be a serious obstacle to obtaining care. But even for those with insurance, most are unprepared for the out-of-pocket expenses of their cancer treatment. Some of these expenses include direct medical costs, including prescription medications and hospital charges, as well as non-medical costs, such as transportation, including gas and parking, and getting to and from your treatment and appointments. Home care, such as a home health aide or any home-related service, can be an additional expense, as well as necessary medical supplies. In addition, daily living expenses, such as the cost of food, childcare, utilities, and housing, can all be really challenging as well. When you or a loved one receive a cancer diagnosis, finances may be the last thing you want to think about. Unfortunately, financial concerns may be a source of continuing stress for many living with a cancer diagnosis. It may be helpful to keep track of important documents and records in one place for easy access. Reviewing your income, healthcare expenses, and a payment plan for gas, electric, phone, and mortgage and rent is highly recommended. You may also consider receiving advice from your accountant or financial planner. Please know that if you are encountering financial hardships, there are organizations that can help you find resources based on your location and/or type of cancer. A Helping Hand, a resource guide, can be accessed online by visiting the Cancer Care website, which includes a list of national and local organizations and what they assist with. The National Resource Guide that can be found on the Patient Advocate Foundation website may help as well. We have been talking today about the cost of your care, what to do if you are uninsured or underinsured, and the importance of creating a support network as part of that care, and we'll now talk about how cancer care can be part of that network. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and potential financial assistance. Cancer Care's resource navigation offers a short-term, strengths-based approach service to both patients and caregivers. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. If you're interested in learning more about the support services we offer, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hopeline at 800-813-4673 and speak with one of our oncology social workers. Our oncology social workers are trained on how a cancer diagnosis can impact an individual as well as their loved ones, offering cancer-focused support and resources. Thank you for your attention and opportunity to speak in this informative program. I will now turn our program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. LaPietra. That was just a wonderful presentation, very, very comprehensive. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, and just a really stellar presentation. Thank you. And now we are ready to move on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Kath to explain to you how to enter your questions online.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So the question for Ms. Weiss, is there a way to estimate how much my premium would be under COBRA before I leave my job?
That would be a question for your human resources department. They should be able to provide that information for you. But basically, it is the cost of your plan. The amount that people who are employees pay is a portion of the full cost of the plan, and the company pays the other portion. So COBRA means the company is no longer making their contribution to the cost of your plan.
Thank you. And this is a question for Tasha Saltz. Will I receive a notification if one of my providers becomes out of network? My insurance has changed its network coverage before, and I am concerned about receiving a surprise increased bill.
That's a little bit out of my immediate expertise, and one of the other speakers might be able to comment on it. I wouldn't be comfortable assuming that anything's going to happen automatically. And I would urge you to speak directly with your provider about the change in insurance. And your provider should be able to connect you with whomever in their structure, whether it is somebody in their office that deals with patient finance issues, or whether there's some institutional patient financial services, somebody who deals with the insurance and insurance coverage and can advise you whether the coverage will continue with that provider. Sometimes, often, out-of-network coverage can be arranged. If that happens, it's important to clarify in advance whether that will be full coverage or whether that will put additional non-covered financial responsibility on you. And sometimes with a change in insurance coverage, it may force a change in care where you need to move to a provider that is within network in order to be adequately covered. So all of these are possibilities, and there isn't one specific answer I can tell you in advance, but you're right to be concerned about it, and the way to address the concern is moving forward and asking questions now, not waiting to find out later that there is a problem.
I don't think there's anyone else want to add to that answer that Dr. Saltz provided.
This is Michelle Weiss. It depends on whether where your coverage, what rules your coverage is, your insurance coverage is subject to. In New York, I can speak to New York State. Insurance plans are required to keep their provider directories updated every 2 weeks. If they don't, and you get out-of-network care because you relied on that provider network, the plan will have to cover it. Of course, it takes a lot of advocacy, but you should be able to rely on your plan provider directories, and so you should start with your plan to ask if that provider, and you should always make sure that provider at that location, because sometimes certain locations are in-network and others are not also.
So this was a specific circumstance where, if I understood, the patient is aware that there's been a change in coverage and that there's a significant probability that the current provider is now out of network. So you should not wait to find out whether or not there's financial consequences for that. I think you have to be dealing directly with that your current provider and his or her financial services people to find out, are you going to be covered for the care, or will it be necessary for you to switch your care to a provider that's in network?
Excellent. Thank you. And another question, and this one, I think Michelle McCourt probably could address this. Are there any specific resources or websites I can use to find the manufacturer coupons for my prescriptions? Do you know if they typically look for them at the pharmacy if my insurance does not cover my meds?
Yeah, you can speak with your pharmacist, but you can. What I usually suggest is that, like I said, an internet search for the name of the drug will typically bring you to the medication's website. And through that website, any patient resources or financial assistance or anything that they offer will be listed there. Another great resource is needymeds.org, I believe. And I know that Carolyn is going to be sending out some resources after this conference. So, you know, the best way really that I find is either talking to the pharmacy, because they are probably aware of some resources, or doing an internet search with using the name of the medication as the search term.
Excellent. Thank you. And Needy Meds is a collaborating organization on these programs. You'll definitely be getting quite a few resources from us what our speakers have mentioned today, and also resources that we have. So when you get the SurveyMonkey evaluation in a week, it'll also include any resource that we mentioned, even some that we may not have mentioned, that would be really helpful based on some of the questions you're asking. So thank you so much. Thanks, and thanks, Michelle. Thank you. A question for Ms. McCourt. Is there an enrollment period for CHIP, or can I apply whenever? If so, when does coverage start?
CHIP meaning Children's Health Insurance Programs?
Yes.
It's my understanding that, you know, if you're already, I believe you can enroll at any time. It would be based on, you know, your the needs of your child. I don't know if you're already in the program, if you need to re-enroll every year. If that's the case, then they'll let you know when the open enrollment period is. But if you're somebody new to it, or your circumstances have changed, then you should be able to apply at any time.
Excellent. Thank you. So this is an interesting question for Dr. Saltz. It's a long question, and if you could answer this in a general way, because it's a personal question, and on the other hand, it probably applies to many people here. My mother had advanced lung cancer. She took standard chemo. It worked some time at the beginning, but last CT has showed it did not make much difference this time. Now doctors stopped chemotherapy. She is not suitable with targeted therapy. When I made research, it is suggested to use immunotherapy, but I do not have enough financial resources to pay for it. I wonder whether it is possible to have these immunotherapy drugs via support groups. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so I think I understand the question. I think I can help you with this. And
okay.
I want to emphasize, I don't personally treat lung cancer, and I don't know this individual. So I'm going to give you a general concept, because the patients I take care of have cancers of the digestive tract, colon cancer, rectal cancer, pancreas cancer, that sort of thing. But I'm going to be comfortable assuming that the doctors taking care of any patient are interested in making sure that that patient receives all appropriate care. We never, as a group, want to not use something that has the potential to help. Now, there are certain types of situations where drugs are useful and other places where they're not. And so if an immunotherapy is appropriate and that there's evidence that it's going to be helpful in a circumstance, then third-party insurance, whether it's private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid, will cover it. If you have a situation where insurance is not covered, and that would be a situation where a doctor would say, I can't give it to you because it's very expensive, and the doctor isn't buying the drug for you, the insurance company has to pay for it, or you would have to pay for it. That suggests very, very strongly that it is not accepted standard practice to use that. Now, there's a lot of stuff out on the internet that may tell you that something is appropriate, and I'm not sure that I can agree with all of that. There's a lot of things on the internet that I feel are just plain inaccurate. So the internet, remember, is not a curated, proven source of accurate information. There's an awful lot of information, misinformation, and disinformation. You've got to have comfort with the doctor you're seeing and trust that doctor's opinions and recommendations. And if you don't, then you need to find another doctor and get another opinion. But if you're unable to find a doctor whose opinion matches what you're finding on the internet, I'm inclined to be very worried that what you're finding on the internet is not accurate information. So the idea that a patient would be an appropriate candidate for immunotherapy and a doctor would say you can't have it and or insurance won't cover it just doesn't sound likely to me. I think there's a misunderstanding somewhere.
Thank you. And another question for you, Dr. Saltz. This may be the last question. How do I know when I can appeal an insurance denial? I received a denial for a PET scan that I need, but I'm unsure if I will win the appeal. How long does this process take?
Usually that kind of thing falls on us, the healthcare professionals, rather than the patient. I don't think the patient is in a position to appeal. When I get a denial of a scan that I'm requesting or a drug that I'm requesting for a patient, then what has to happen is what's called a peer-to-peer review, where the clinician is on a basically usually this is a phone conversation with a doctor working for the insurance company to discuss what is the reason for the appeal and see if it can be overturned. Sometimes it's overturned because the insurance company either had inaccurate information or incomplete information, or I, as a doctor, am able to convince the doctor working for the insurance company of the appropriateness. And sometimes it's declined because the doctor's request is not standard care. And so when you've brought up the particular circumstance of a PET scan, there are places where some doctors request them, but they're not considered part of standard practice. Now, it again depends on what type of cancer and what situation. For example, I treat mostly patients with colon and rectal cancer, and in that area, PET scan's not a very good test. And in most cases, a CAT scan is preferred, and an insurance company may decline it because national guidelines say not to get a PET. In other places, a PET is appropriate. The insurance company has misunderstood, and that's an adjudication between the doctor and the insurance company. So I think you have to take that question back to the doctor, find out, is there another way we could deal with this? Is there another type of scan we could get that would get the job done? Are they saying simply you ordered it, you know, 6 weeks apart and we only pay for it 8 weeks or 12 weeks apart and we can move it out? There are different ways to approach it, but it's between the doctor and the company.
Oh, thank you so much. And I just want to remind everybody that next week we have part three of this series, which will be on cancer and the workplace, understanding your legal protections. That's a really important program. And so some of you have already signed up for that, but if you haven't, then we'll be sending you information about that as well. Also, once again, I will reiterate that we will be sending you all the references that we've provided, resources in the SurveyMonkey evaluation that you'll receive in a week, so you'll be able to have, and plus you have, of course, access to all of cancer care services. So now I'm going to ask each of our speakers to provide a takeaway. I'm starting with Dr. Saltz, then Ms. McCourt, then Ms. Weiss, and then Ms. LaPietra. Dr. Weiss? Dr. Saltz?
Yes. So I'm going to repeat what I emphasized at the beginning, which is ask questions. Feel comfortable asking questions. Speak with, have a dialogue with your healthcare providers, and do not be shy about expressing your concerns on anything. Your concerns on your health, your concerns on side effects, and your concerns on financial side effects and financial challenges in dealing with cancer.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Ms. McCourt.
Thank you. My biggest takeaway, I think, is, again, let your healthcare team know. You know, I can't stress this enough. If you're experiencing difficulties paying for your treatments, talk to them about it. They've heard this before. You're not going to be telling them anything new. And they can connect you with the patient navigators or financial counselors within their location. And then again, there are some national organizations like Cancer Care that you can tap into to help with those concerns.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Ms. Weiss.
I guess I would say it's a know your rights type of situation with your health insurance. Make sure that you have tapped all of the benefits you're eligible for, and make sure, don't just assume if they say no to something that is the last word.
Excellent. Thank you. And Ms. LaPietra.
Yes. My biggest takeaway would be to convey that you're not alone in this journey. This can be really overwhelming and challenging. And so here at Cancer Care, we're here to provide that support, those resources, and to even give you language around how to word these questions that can sometimes be complex. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I'd like to thank our participants for asking such great questions. We've done this program before, but I have to say today's program, really, the questions are terrific, and our speakers were super terrific in answering the questions. So, but I do want to comment about the questions. First of all, not everybody on the call got to ask their question, so there are many people who are still in queue. For those of you who asked a question, please take your question back to Treating Healthcare Team, because they know you the best, and they have access to your records and information like that, and you've learned a lot on the program. So that ask the question of them, and they will give you their answer as well. And then also, for those of you who are in queue and didn't get to ask a question, take your question to your healthcare team. You've learned a lot, and they will actually be able to address your question, because they have access to your records and all of that. Also, I just want to remind everyone that that you are not alone, that you are now part of a community of support of many organizations, and we'll be sending you many of them today, but you certainly have access to the Cancer Care, all of Cancer Care's resources, and you also have access to our Cancer Care Copayment Assistance Program and all of our social workers who staff our Hopeline. And most importantly, we discovered over time that many of you have no difficulty reaching your healthcare team during the day, but evenings, weekends, and holidays seem to be more challenging for everybody. So I would suggest that you check with your healthcare team and ask them who is available evenings, weekends, and holidays. That really seems to be the hardest time to reach people. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.